Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. I'm Caleb Simmons.
And I'm Joshua Simmons. We are two brothers who love fly fishing, our families, and are men of faith. But like most of you listening, we're still not experts on any of those subjects.
So our hope is to speak with as many people that we believe are experts on these subjects and pose the questions that most of us are asking.
So thanks for joining us along the journey as we seek to inspire and encourage dads and anglers as we wade through fishing, fatherhood, and faith on the fly.
Coming up on today's episode.
The outdoors is kind of like, they call it Mother Earth for a reason. And it, when you take kids out there, nature does all the work. It kind of transforms them. And if they're open to it, and if you're open to how they want to interact out there, then magic can happen. You know, magic can totally happen. And it's not all about catching fish. I mean, it could be like playing with the freaking bugs in the grass, but celebrate those kind of things. And I don't know. I've met very few kids who, in one way or the other, don't respond to the outdoors when it's presented to them in the right way.
Well, hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. I'm Caleb Simmons, joined as always by my brother, Joshua. Joshua, what's up, man?
We are creeping ever closer to episode 100, dude. It is so hard to believe. This would make episode 96. We're only four away from 100. I am getting excited for that, for sure.
That's wild, man. I never thought when we started this thing we'd be running close to... I never thought we'd do 100 episodes by any stretch of the imagination. And here we are, just a little... almost 2 years in, and we're almost at episode 100. That's nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So we are pre-recording this intro because we're both on some vacations and trips. So I can't really give you an update on my fishing. Maybe we'll have to come back and you have to check out Instagram. We'll do that on the next episode. But today's episode's really cool, man. I found out about this company, and I don't want to pronounce the name wrong because sometimes I do, but I'm getting better at it. It's Bahio Sunglasses.
Bahio. Yeah.
Bahio Sunglasses.
Yep.
And we were very fortunate to have with us the founder, CEO, Mr. Al Perkinson. And Al tells some great stories, man.
Yeah, Al's just an amazing guy. And just to hear his story about the sunglass company, but also just hear a story about the crazy places that he's been and his heart for the next generation, really, when it comes to fly fishing,
yeah.
I thought was just so cool that we talk about a lot during this episode and how he's got a real strong desire for really cultivating the next generation of fly fishing, I think. And so I love to hear that and excited for everyone today to hear our conversation with Al.
And one thing that's really cool is I was able to get my hands on a pair of these sunglasses. And I'll be real, man, I have never been a person who was big into sunglasses. I just had like a pair of... what you would say maybe cheaper, I won't throw a name out there, but polarized sunglasses. But for the last month or two, I have been fishing in these Bahio sunglasses. Yep. And
it changed your game.
When I was in Texas,
yeah,
it was nuts. That's the cool, amount man. Of fish I could spot. And I was sight fishing to all the cichlids and those bass and just sight fishing those guys and being up on the boat. And you know, if you're out on an adventure this summer, if you're out on the water, you know, when the sun gets up and it's bright, the better pair of sunglasses you have, the better. And so I would say for sure, check out these sunglasses. I don't want to, you know, say what he says in the episode, but just about how they have some of the technology they have to make them work. And, you know, we are excited that Al took some time to speak with us.
Yeah, you can check these things out at bahiosunglasses.com. That's BAJIO sunglasses.com. You can get your hands on a pair of those and learn even more about Al's story and the cool story behind these amazing sunglasses. So make sure to check them out online. They're also on Instagram as well.
And if you're right in the middle of summer getting adventures or planning adventures for the fall, as we have told you, we are very fortunate enough to have Rent This Rod help us out with some rods, and you too can get your hands on some rods from Rent This Rod. So maybe you're going on that adventure that, you know, you don't really want to spend all the money to get the whole setup because you're not really sure if you're going to do it again. Maybe it's that once of a lifetime trip. Maybe it's that trip that you know you're not going to get to do, but every once every 2 years. And you can check out rent this rod, and they can hook you. Man, they could ship your rod to your hotel, to your Airbnb, to your resort, wherever you're going, and your rod is come rigged, ready to go, line, reel, rod, ready for action. So check those guys out over at Rent This Rod.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Joshua, by the time this episode drops, we'll have hopefully done some major saltwater fishing. And, you know, just before we dive into this conversation with Al, I'd love to ask you, what are you most concerned about maybe when it comes to going saltwater fishing hopefully this week?
I mean, when this drops, we'll have done it. But, you know, I'm hoping that my casting is going to survive. That's kind of the biggest thing I worry about, is just not being able to cast far enough. But yeah, you know,
we just got our hands on an 8-weight and a 10-weight, and I wanted to take it out and cast it today, but it's been pouring the rain here all day, so I haven't had a chance to practice yet.
But the thing is, you know, I was talking on that float trip when I was in Texas, and Mr. Kettleman, you know, my guide that day, he said, there's a lot of guys we get that can cast and double haul for 100 feet, but they can't roll cast for 10 yards into the spot.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping maybe that, since I can do that, maybe I can figure out the other
stuff.
Yeah. But man, we can't wait to do all that. Just a big thanks to Al and the guys over at Bahio Sunglasses for joining us for this episode. Look for more stuff coming from them. You can get them right here at Maggie Valley Fly Shop if you're local. Maggie Valley Fly Shop carries them. And they're also big time partners with our friends at Turtle Box Audio. And you know, I'm telling you folks, nothing better in the summertime, whether you're outside grilling, or whether you're on a family trip to the beach, to have your Turtle Box Audio with you. So make sure and check those guys out, turtleboxaudio.com. We can't thank them enough for you know, being a part of the show and what they do to really make all of essential tool. I never thought when I started fishing an essential tool would be a speaker. But if I'm not wading deep in the park, that turtle box is coming with me.
Yeah, for
so,
sure.
Caleb, I think we're ready to rock, man. Let's get Al on. This is a great episode. I don't want to really speak too much more.
Yeah, for sure, man. Al is an awesome guest. So, Al, if you're listening, thanks for taking some time to spend with us. And we hope you guys all enjoy our conversation with Mr. Al Perkinson from Bahio Sunglasses. Dads on the Flies, brought to you by Catch Cam Nets.
Catch Cam Nets, where you can build your own net. It's your net, so you choose every feature.
Check them out online at catchcamnets.com. Dads on the Flies, also brought to you by Trout Routes. Joshua, when we are looking for new places to go catch trout, I can think of no better resource to use than the Trout Routes app. It has been an awesome thing to help us find more trout to catch.
Yeah, man, whether exploring new water or just being a new angler at all, Trout Routes now includes all of the lower 48 states on their amazing app that can be found anywhere you get your apps. So make sure and download Trout Routes today for all your fly fishing adventures.
Well, hey, everyone, and we are really excited today to welcome to the podcast Mr. Al Perkinson of Bahio Sunglasses. Al, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me, man. It's great to be here.
Well, Al, I was really excited to get you on the show. Heard you tell some cool stories on another podcast, your passion for what you do, which we're going to get into here in a minute. But what's really cool in another episode I heard you talk on was you grew up sort of in the North Carolina area, and I think some of your fishing kind of started in North Carolina, so which was really cool to us. So tell us a little bit about your kind of intro into maybe fishing and especially fly fishing, and why that brought you to North Carolina.
Well, I was born in North Carolina, so I didn't have a choice in that matter. I was born in Charlotte, and I've always, you know, we've moved around a lot as a kid, and, you know, as an adult, have moved around quite a bit, but North Carolina's always been my home, and I love North Carolina because it's got the coastal stuff, and then it's got, you know, I like to play golf as well, so it's got Pinehurst, and then it's got the mountains. Skiing might leave a little bit to be desired.
Yeah.
Haven't lived out west for a while. I learned what real skiing was all about.
For sure. For sure, yeah.
You know, when I was in high school and probably younger, you know, we would get on the church bus and we had our blue jeans on and we'd spray it with like the stuff that makes it waterproof. And we'd go up to the you know, Beach Mountain or Sugar and just, you know, get sopping wet and fall and, you know, bust our asses all the time. But we had a great time. And, you know, that was our experience and skiing in the North Carolina mountains for a long time. But anyway, I always loved North Carolina. It might not be great at anything, but it's really good at everything. And, you know, the people who come from North Carolina traditionally, just a great like literary tradition there, incredible writers, news guys, you know, Roger Mudd and all these guys who started, you know, TV news years and years ago. For some reason, you know, Charles Carrott, I mean, doesn't get any better than Charles Carrott. And yeah, so anyway, I'm dating myself, but always loved North Carolina and proud to say that's my home state, man.
That's awesome. We are both, neither one from North Carolina, but we consider it home now. So it has definitely been home to us.
Those jeans being mountain.
That story.
Those we have lived that sure.
out. Hopping in the church bus with jeans going skiing. We've definitely done that a time or two. Well, Al, what kind of got you into fishing? Where did that kind of start for you? Was it as when you were younger? Was it when you were older? When did you kind of start really chasing after after fish?
Well, I think it started mainly with just the outdoors. And, you know, my dad was a businessman. He was from Chattanooga, Tennessee. And, yeah, I guess more of a city guy than a country guy. And he, you know, he didn't mind the outdoors. He liked the outdoors, but that wasn't his thing. It was football, basketball, baseball. And so he would come to all my games and was definitely a great dad, but he wasn't the guy who introduced me to the outdoors. And when we lived in Charlotte, we had a creek that ran behind our house, and now it's all subdivisions. But back then there were a couple of subdivisions and a lot of fields, and this creek, man, we lived in that freaking creek. And every Saturday morning was just like, you know, in a kid's mind, it's just adventure time. And am I going to be in the jungles of Africa and I'm Tarzan, or, you know, just these fantasies that creek inspired. And we would, you know, we caught bullfrogs and snapping turtles and crayfish, and there weren't any fish and, you know, little minnows and stuff, but nothing major in there. But, you know, that was our main thing that we did, was just hang out in the creek and build forts in the woods and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, once a year, usually, or twice a year, we would go down to the beach with my grandparents and my parents and my brother and I. We have four boys, and I'm the oldest. And then the one right under me, 2 years younger, Ken, he's a crazy redheaded kid, and he loves the outdoors. And so he and I just discovered everything ourselves, you know. And every year we go to the beach, and I don't even know where we got the fishing rods from, but we'd go out on the pier, and we didn't spend a second on the beach. We were on the pier with all the fishing dudes all the time. And I learned that sea catfish have a big spike in the back of their, in their fin that will sting the crap out of you if you're not careful. And bloodworms will like get you right here and, you know, do a number on them with their little fangs. And so anyway, I think that's where, you know, fishing down at the ocean in Crescent Beach, which is now nothing but condos, and Sunset Beach and Ocean Isle Beach. That's where we hung out, and we just fished in the marsh and we'd go out and get crabs and all that kind of stuff. And then back home, it was more bass fishing. And so we had friends that had bass ponds, and we just, you know, we'd get in a little John boat and get a hula popper and throw topwater stuff and just cruising around in one of those boats, like when the sun's starting to go down and you got bass coming up to eat topwater stuff. It was just like heaven, man. It was amazing. So we just sort of did it, you know, that way growing up. And, you know, I went to school and went to grad school in New York. And then when I finally, you know, got my dream job, it was with Costa Sunglasses. And that's when my fishing just took off, because we were, you know, we became a fishing brand, and I got to travel all over the world, and I got introduced to fly fishing. I'd always wanted to do fly fishing. I always thought it was the coolest thing. And I would watch Walker's K, man, Flip Pallet. He just inspired me. And I always wanted to do that. And I remember the first time I was on a saltwater flat in the Bahamas with my friend Oliver White, and just learning how to saltwater fly fish. And I just looked around. And I was like, man, it's as cool as I thought it was going to be. You know, this has lived up to my expectations that I've had for 20 years or whatever it was. And when I started doing saltwater fly fishing, that was all I wanted to do. And that's, I mean, hell, we named this company after the flats. You know, Bajio means the shallows, and because that's what we love to do. And, you know, that's what we sort of devoted the company to helping, you know, protect and renew and all that kind of stuff.
There's a couple things I heard there. Number one is for people who maybe are listening to this show and aren't sold out on fly fishing yet, it lives up to the expectation. I thought that was a great point that we always try to tell everybody. For sure, fly fishing lives up to the expectation. It also makes me think that I know when I get to a flat for the first time, which we're still waiting and can't just, we're itching to do, that's going to live up to my expectation. So that made me feel really good. So most of your experience fly fishing has been in the salt and chasing these awesome species all over the world, really. What is it for you that you love about that? And is it continual a challenge for you to be a great angler? And some of all these videos we see, you know, on these film tours and stuff, sounds like you're getting to do that a lot, and you fish in some of these places. And so what kind of experience is that like? And does it grow over time? Like, you get better, I hope, because I know I'm going to be pretty bad when I first do it.
Well, the thing is like, first of all, you're out there to have a good time.
For sure.
And, you know, you're going to mess up, and nobody's perfect. And, you know, so it's just, you know, I think that's a big part of what we try to do, is demystify the whole thing and make it approachable and accessible. And really, it's less about catching huge fish. You do. But it's more just about the experience on the water and with your friends or your family and with the local people, wherever, whatever country you're in, and learning about their culture and all that kind of stuff. It's the whole experience that's really amazing, and, you know, makes us want to, you know, make sure these things are around, these flats and these other fishing spots are around for a long time. But, you know, I think purely from a fishing standpoint, and I mean, we lived in Montana for a while and on the Gallatin River. So we fished the freshwater stuff a lot too. But, you know, the challenge of saltwater fishing is probably part of it, because, I mean, you're out there on the bow of a boat, and I mean, we're kind of hooked on permit fishing. I know your listeners can't see the wall behind my desk here, but it's got drawings.
We noticed really quick. Yeah.
But our friend Casey Anderson did that for us. But in the salt, you know, there are so many factors that come into play that determine where the fish are going to be on any given day. So you've got, you know, what's the moon doing? What are the tides doing? What are the winds doing? What direction are they coming from? How hard are they blowing? There's just all these different factors that come into play. And some of these guides who are at the places we love to go, they have like a supercomputer for a brain, because they factor in all of these situations and all these factors. And then, like, we're going to fish over here today, you know? And it's just amazing. But I think the challenge of that, you know, casting in wind is a challenge, and you have to learn how to do it, learn how to double haul, learn how to make small adjustments depending on where the wind is coming from. And, you know, the fish doesn't always cooperate and, you know, come tailing up when downwind, so that you can get the, you know, they're going to be over here to the side, so that when you cast, the line comes and hits you in the face. So you got to duck, and there's all that line management and wind management and all that is a challenge. But I think the main thing is just, it's hunting, you know, and you're out there on the bow of the boat and you're just looking all the time, and you're watching the water and you're seeing where you think the fish might be, and you're watching for, you know, a push or a tail or a fin or whatever, just to find that fish. And then you're seeing the fish in the water and then casting to what you see. So it's not like you're just hucking blind cast out there. You're really hunting the fish. And then, you know, if you're fishing for like a permit or even a tarpon where there's not a lot of them out there, you may be standing on the bow of that boat getting pulled around, you know, by a guide for hours, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours, and you don't see anything. Then a fishtail pops up and you're expected to make an 80-foot cast into a 15-mile-an-hour wind and hit the damn fish on the nose. Yeah. After you've been standing there for 3 or 4 hours and you're stiff. I don't know how we ever catch a fish, man. It's super challenging. And then the environment is just beautiful. And the colors are just mesmerizing. That water that's turquoise and blue and green, it's just beautiful. And the coral underneath, the palm trees, it's just like one of these days, if I ever retire, that's probably where it's going to be, you know, a place like that.
Sounds amazing. And I think that's the thing that you just spoke to, Al, is so great about fishing, and especially flats fishing, it sounds like, is just the challenge. And it's always something new. It's something that keeps you coming back every time because it's different. And and I know that's got to be really exciting for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Al, we want to dive in a little bit now to the story of Bajio, you know, the sunglass company that you started. You mentioned that you'd worked with Costa for a while, it sounds like. And then you started something new. Now, before we dive into this, I really do think one of the most important tools that a angler can have is really a good pair of sunglasses. And I'm sure we'll dive into that here in a little bit. So we'll dive into some of that. But first of all, tell us a little bit the story about Bajio and why you started this company.
Well, you know, like you said, I'd been at Costa for almost 20 years and built that from a tiny little Florida brand to an international brand. And I handled all the branding and marketing and strategy and stuff like that. And, you know, we had a team of, you know, a couple, like three other guys. And we were the management team for that company the whole time. We stayed together and having one team and not a lot of changeover, I think, is really critical to success. But, you know, it's sort of like, I wasn't going to say once in a lifetime experience, but now that I have Bajio, it's twice in a lifetime. It was cool. I mean, the company was incredibly successful. And then we developed this kind of mission driven type of approach to business, a lot like, you know, what Yvon Chouinard did at Patagonia, you know, inspired by that. But it was, hey, can we use business for not just making money, you know, for our stockholders or for ourselves, but can we use the power of business to make a difference in the world? There's so many issues that need to be addressed. And, you know, there's a lot of greed out there. There's a lot of chasing the almighty buck and stepping on anybody gets in your way. And so using business to do good, you know, was a powerful concept, and we were able to build that Costa brand into that. But then it was bought by a giant European company, and ultimately I left because it was not the cool little company that I'd helped build anymore. It was becoming just sort of a business and owned by a giant corporation. So I took off and went to Montana. I see you got a Sims hat on. I worked for Sims for a couple of years. And, you know, they wanted me to help turn Sims into Costa. And but it was a private equity deal. And they really just wanted to sell it, you know, build it up and sell it, which didn't really do much for mine and Marguerite's souls. You know, it was fun. We had a good time. We loved Montana. But then we moved back to Charleston and worked for Hook for a little bit, another private equity deal. And, you know, they were good companies. It was a good experience from a work standpoint, but it just wasn't allowing us to use business for good like we'd always wanted to do. And so when I left Hook at the end of 19, you know, Marguerite and I, we were in Charleston and we sat down and talked and we said, you know, if we really want to get back to having that experience where work and life and everything is all like, you know, comes together behind something we really believe in and are passionate about. If we want that, then, and we realized that we really did, then we're going to have to start our own business. And about that time, the company that owned Costa came in and closed down Costa and fired 300 people all in one day, right here in Daytona Beach. And so we saw that as sort of the final indication that it was time to do this. And we had a good situation in Charleston, but we decided that we would move to New Smyrna Beach and, you know, reach out to all the people that we had worked with, the really the best, the cream of the crop out of the 300 that got fired, and handpick the people we wanted on this new company. And it was great because they came in day one knowing exactly what to do. They had done it before, and they believed in what we believed in. And so, you know, that was a little over 2 years ago. And, you know, we've been in business for, I guess we just finished up our second year. But, you know, it was a tough decision when, I don't know, it's different working for other people versus stepping out and doing it yourself. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of personal wealth or anything. We're not like trust funders. We're not, you know, yeah. we'd done okay, but we had to go out and raise all the money to start the company, which I'd never done before. And that's weird, asking people that you've known for years to invest and give you money. And luckily we found a bunch of great people, almost all of whom fish and believe in conservation. And so they understood what we were doing. They understood the market, and they knew, you know, the opportunity that was going to open up. And so we just dove in, and then we, you know, went through COVID, which was a whole
that's gotta be insane. You know, start a company right in the midst of COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. With the international supply chain. And, you know, it was, I've got one of these days I'll look back on it and think about it more, but it's like, I can't believe we survived that whole thing.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love it. It's going great. And we're happy we did it.
That's great. It's definitely a different ball game for sure when you're the one leading the charge, and all of it kind of rises and falls on your shoulders. I know that's got to be a lot of responsibility to carry, but I think it's so great and it's so refreshing what you and your family have done there, creating a company, as you said, to do good, not just about the bottom dollar. I mean, obviously you're trying to make money, you're a company, but when you're knowing that money that you're making is actually going to help support causes that really matter, I think, first of all, it gives your people that come to work every day a whole lot better reason to come to work, and knowing that they're doing something more than just trying to fill somebody's pocket. And two, I just think it's really special because it gives your customers also, you know, that they're willing to invest in something that they really believe in. And so talk a little bit about what Bajio is doing. You know, you mentioned that it is that word means the shallows. I think I'd read something from you a while back where you talked about your importance of investing in the shallows, because not only is the shallows a place that you love to fish, it actually supports the entire ecosystem. And two, you know, it's all about kind of pouring into that next generation of anglers. And so talk a little bit about some of the things that Bajio is doing right now, and what you're excited about as far as how you guys are giving back.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we were thinking about starting the company, you know, at first we were kind of thinking like marketers and business people, and I don't know, getting into some weird places. And then we just said, look, this is our chance. We just need to do what we're passionate about and something we're excited to come to work about, you know, work for every single day, and not worry about if it's the biggest or the most popular or it's going to sell a lot of stuff. Let's just start with doing something we're passionate about and believing in. And so the flats, the saltwater flats especially, but, you know, the marshes and in Charleston and the bayous down in Louisiana. I mean, all of those are the estuaries where, you know, the next generation of ocean dwellers, that's kind of where they're born and they're raised. And it just is an incredibly important area for the ecosystem. So not only do we love it, but we understood that the importance of it. And it's right next to the shore, so it gets the most abuse of any part of the ocean, you know, from whether it's pollution or runoff or development or any of that kind of stuff. It's always under constant pressure. So it needed an advocate. And, you know, I don't know that we're still a tiny company, right? And we can't write million-dollar checks that are going to, like, build infrastructure and do, you know, huge things, but we can do things, and we can, you know, hopefully set an example, and we can tell stories that are super compelling that will bring people in who might not have been in before. So, you know, we've done a fair amount of things to be, you know, right out of the gate. We've done a lot of work down in Ixtlilac, Mexico. It's a place we'd fished before, and we just love this little town that's like at the very end of Mexico. It's the last stop, and it's just sort of isolated little underdog kind of place, and we love underdogs. And so anyway, we decided that the way the currents work, they get all this ocean trash dumped on them, like massive amounts. And the guys in the village were telling us that a long time ago, that was good because a ship would wreck somewhere and then all the cargo would wash up on their beach. So they didn't even think about Christmas presents. They just knew the ocean was going to bring them toys or whatever. That half the town was built out of lumber that just like washed up on the shore from a wrecked ship. He said, but over time, those good things got sort of overwhelmed and overshadowed by just junk. And you'll find like little bottles from cruise ships that, you know, get thrown overboard because they don't want to pay the, you know, the weight of it. And so they'll halfway burn it and throw it in the ocean before they land. The cruise ships are some of the companies are okay, but most of them are not very good stewards. So anyway, we decided we do a beach cleanup, and we created a t-shirt and a hat with a rooster on it. And that rooster is a painting that's on one of the buildings in the village. And it's a building that's owned by this guy whose nickname is Rooster. And he has sort of red hair. So for a Mexican with red hair, it's unusual. And so they call him Rooster. And Rooster was a character, man. His ancestors were pirates. And I think he's a freaking pirate, man. He's a trip. And so we were having drinks at the bar one night. And I said, Rooster, man, can we use your rooster painting in some of our stuff to help clean up the beaches of Ixtlilac? And he's like, sure, I will let you do that. And so we, you know, took a picture of it and then put it on hats and stuff. And then when we sell them, then $10 goes to clean up the beach. And we calculated that one hat could clean up 20 meters of beach. And there's 12,000 meters down there. So it would take about 3 or 4 months to clean it up. And by the time they were finished, it'd be time to start over again because it keeps dumping. And we found a gal in town who her father was the first fishing guide down in Ixtlilac. And he had died during COVID, and her brother or husband, I think her husband died in COVID as well. So she needed work and she had a couple little kids. And so we hired her to sort of run the program for us. And she gathered up like 10 workers, and they every day would just go out and clean up the beaches. And then as we sold the shirts, we'd send them the money to pay all the workers. And they did a fantastic job. We went down there and helped them clean it up, you know, and it's hard work. And the national parks came and took it away and recycled it and stuff. But so that was a pretty cool project. And we also, on our sunglasses, the temples, the inside of the temples, we have a program called Temples of Change. And so we'll have an artist do a painting on the inside, and then we'll sell those, and the proceeds will go to different things. The first one we did went to planting coral reefs. So each pair that we sold would plant one coral. And these corals grow to be like 7 or 8 feet wide and in a short amount of time. And so that, so we've done that. And then we worked with the scientists down there and done some mapping of the area so that they can measure the baseline of how things improve and so forth. So we just kind of small projects. We tell the story and pull people in to take, you know, to care about it. But I think the biggest thing for us is youth and bringing youth into, you know, this next generation into not only fishing, but, you know, fishing conservation and, you know, using fishing to explore and to meet these local communities. It really improves their lives. So we, I think going forward, we're going to make bringing young people in sort of the tip of the spear, and then they will be the ones that drive a lot of the conservation efforts. So pretty soon we'll be launching a new app, and the app is called Bajio Trails. And we're creating fishing trails eventually all over the world. The first one will be in the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. And this will be kind of an app that will have a host in each town. And then that host will help if a young person wants to go and fly fish on a budget, because these lodges cost so much money that young people can't even afford it. Only old people can. And the young people, you know, they need to explore. We need to get them out there. So anyway, they can use the app. They can find cheap places to stay. They can find places to camp, cheap places to eat, some local people to talk to, take them on a DIY kind of experience.
Love
it. So we're going to be building those trails.
I've got to make sure this is, I mean, you said young people, but some of us older public educators are still falling that young people budget. So some of us may be looking at that.
Yeah,
I knew that's where Kato was thinking app. About. Yeah.
I love that. If you're young or you have a young person's budget.
Yeah, there you go. That's where we're at. That's me.
That is so neat.
That's me too. Starting your own business.
There you go.
For sure. Well, I think it's just so neat too, Al, because the next generation, especially, and you know, I look at like Gen Z and even my kids' generation, Gen Alpha, they're already so purpose minded. You know, they don't really do anything unless they're cause minded. Maybe, I mean, they're super focused on causes that they believe in, and so I think this is great. You're trying to do something to get this generation that is already so focused on taking care of our resources that we have. They're super cause oriented. And so if we can get them focused on things like this, and if your company is able to do that, I mean, kudos to you guys. I just think that's great that you're already seeing that and you're focusing on doing that.
Well, I mean, if you hadn't, I was going to think we might have to tell people I don't think we have to tell anybody a reason now to go out and check out these sunglasses. So we're to this point to where we got to talk about these sunglasses. I was very fortunate enough through reaching out through Bajio, excuse me, and got my hands on a pair, and I've just got them this couple weeks ago and fished with them last Friday. And I will say I've had different sunglasses in my fishing career. Usually I stick to cheaper sunglasses because I know I'm going to break them because that's me. But after fishing last Friday, we floated and I wore those sunglasses. It was, my eyes were opened. And I know we didn't talk about this much, Caleb, but it was like,
I tried them on.
And it was a whole different world for me and just seeing. And we were on a smallmouth river right here locally. And so I just want to say, first of all, I'm a testament to how wonderful they are. But you tell us, what makes them different, Al? What is so cool about these sunglasses, whether you're on the flats or you're up here fishing for trout in these small creeks or floating for smallies here in Western North Carolina?
Well, it kind of starts with the lens. And when, you know, fishing is about, you know, you're using your eyes to spot fish for the most part. And so the sunglasses that you wear, probably next to the rod and reel and, you know, the bugs you're throwing, it's got to be the biggest, most important tool. I don't think I could fish without them. But, you know, we had a lens called 580 at Costa, and at the time, that was 20 years ago. It broke through, and it was a pretty innovative lens. But then there was a lot of the other companies copied that lens. But then there was not really any innovation after that. So I knew that there was a lot of room for innovation, and it just wasn't getting done because, for big companies got something that's selling really well, they're not necessarily going to try to reinvent it. And so we did a lot of research before launching Bahio and pulled in a lot of friends and a lot of scientists and so forth. But what we settled on that was not being done that would have the biggest impact was blue light reduction. Mm-hmm. And, I was a terrible student back in school and did not do well in science at all. But I have learned a lot since I've been in business about, the light spectrum and things like that. So I hope it's not too boring to talk about it, but the light spectrum has all the different kinds of lights that come through at different parts of the spectrum. And the spectrum is measured in increments of nanometers. And so the blue light, each type of light that comes through, it's like all the colors of the rainbow, each type of light that comes through has a different impact on you. And the yellow light comes through, it's really hot, it's really scratchy. And the other brands were focused on reducing yellow light. But truth be known, yellow light is a pretty small amount of the overall light that comes through. The most light is blue light. And blue light it just creates all this haze and this fog. And if you ever look at a blue light bulb, back in the day, we used to have black light posters and we would turn out the lights and turn those things on, but if you look at one of those blue lights, you just see it's all fuzzy and hazy around it. Well, if you can wipe out half the blue light is good, half the blue light is bad. If you can wipe out the bad blue light, everything gets super clear. So that's what we did. And when we did the first prototypes, we took them out and we're like, this is really weird. Why hasn't anybody ever done this before? And it almost looked like you didn't have any glasses on your face. It was that clear. And so clear has health benefits to it, because it cuts down on a lot of the harmful light is in the blue spectrum. And so it helps with macular degeneration and other types of eye disease. It cuts way down on that. It also, a lot of people wear clear glasses to work on their computers, right? And so during COVID, when people were in front of their computers all the time, you saw the blue light glasses start really doing well because people couldn't sleep at night. Video gamers are the same thing. They stare at that screen for hours and hours and they can't sleep. And the reason they can't is because it suppresses melatonin production. And so video gamers and other people on the computers are having a hard time sleeping and they're having to take melatonin pills, So when you cut out the blue light, then your melatonin production comes back and you can actually sleep better as well. So when people try on our glasses and all the research that we've done of our customers, just asking them, what do you like and what you don't like? Clarity is the thing that comes out. They're like, I can't believe how clear these things are. And they put them on. They're like, wow, this really is different, And so when something's clear, it's beautiful too. It's like your windshield, if it's kind of has some dirt and you don't even know that it's there, but then once you spray it and you wipe it off, it's like super clear. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
And then the other part of the lens is just, it's made of a whole bunch of layers and each layer does a different thing. And I won't bore you with all that, but the base lens color has a big impact on contrast, and contrast lets you see the fish in the water. So a gray lens doesn't do much contrast at all. A copper lens does more contrast. And so what we did for our two lowest light lenses, the pink and the purple, we dialed up the red in the base lens. And so what that does is it makes things super, when you add that to the clarity, it makes things super contrasty. And when we take the pink lenses, for example, down to you know, Mexico or Honduras or wherever, Bahamas, and the guides put them on, they're like, I'm not wearing a pink lens, man. That's gross, you know? And then they put them on. They're like, give me the pink. We got some more of the pink. Because they can see the fish so much further out. Wow. So those are kind of the two things, the contrast and the clarity.
So you've got, you know, you've got tons of, I'm just on your website here, and you've got all kinds of frame options, which is, you know, perfect for all different styles. But you were talking about that just a little bit. So just to kind of go back over that, if you're spending a lot, it sounds like I'm going to have to get another pair when we go saltwater fishing too, because that sounds like, but yeah, here you go. But so it sounds like if you're doing a lot more freshwater fishing, what from a standpoint is maybe a better lens setup than if you're doing more is saltwater fishing, or is, and maybe there's one that can kind of do for both, but sounds like one kind of does better for the other.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's two things. One is how dark you want the lens to be. If you're out on the open ocean, you want it to be pretty dark because the sun is so bright. If you're fishing streams and there's a lot, you know, there's trees, there's cloud cover, you know, there's shady spots behind mountains or whatever, then that lens is going to be too dark. You know, I remember going up to Alaska one time, and all we had were these, you know, lenses that were made for the ocean, and it was rainy, of course, up there, and, you know, cold, and, you know, we could hardly even wear the sunglasses. They were just too dark. And so I think that a great lens to start with for fishing mountain streams is the pink lens. And it's, that lens was really made for the mountains, because a long time ago, probably 20 or 30 years ago, there was a brand called Action Optics. They were since bought by Smith. It was bought by Safilo, but that lens had a lot of red in it. And people were just still talking about it 20 years later about, yeah, that lens with the red, it was so good. So I remembered that. And so I put the red into this lens, and sure enough, you know, it has that effect and they love it. So I would start with the rose. We call it rose. I would start with the rose. And then the one downside of that lens is sometimes you'll see a pink reflection on the top of the water. And if you just get used to it and don't worry about it, it's fine. It's not really messing up your vision, but some people don't like that. It doesn't bother me at all. But if you don't like that, you go down to the silver mirror, and that has a copper base, not quite as contrasty, but a great lens for the mountains as well.
That's cool. Well, Joshua, we're going to take a short break, Al. This has been so great, learning a lot about Bajio and learning about sunglasses, this great tool that all anglers really do need. But we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back out, and we want to talk a little bit more about, you've mentioned your family a little bit already in this episode and talking about the importance of that. So we want to hear a little bit more about that and some experiences you've had with getting the next generation out on the water. So we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Dads on the Fly is brought to you by Maggie Valley Fly Shop. Maggie Valley Fly Shop is your go-to stop in Western North Carolina for all your fly fishing needs.
Whether you're looking to book a guided trip or you're wanting to go catch some gear that you may need before you hit the stream, hop into Maggie Valley Fly Shop, grab a cup of coffee, get all the gear you need, and go enjoy a great day on the water in Western North Carolina. You can also check them out online at MaggieValleyFlyShop.com.
And we are back with Mr. Al Perkinson of Bajio Sunglasses. And Al, I heard you mention a couple times that you said, you know, in deciding to do this, you even mentioned having a discussion with Marguerite. And I assume that's your family there that you talked about doing this with. So speak just for a second about your family and what it means that they were behind this and you guys felt that together to make this decision to start Bajio before you talk about your children.
Yeah, I mean, Marguerite and I are both, you know, the second time around. So between us, we have five kids. I've got three sons and she's got two daughters. And so we've been together for a long time. And so they're all, you know, mixed in and all part of one big family. And, you know, I think Marguerite and I, second time around, decided that, number one, we're the type of people who you know, we love to do everything together. It's not like, oh, the guys go off and do their weekend, the girls go off and do their weekend. We're kind of each other's best friends. And so it was real important that we both shared the passion of fishing.
Like it.
Yeah. So, you know, we first met on a boat, you know, flats fishing. So that, you know, fishing is a super important part of our lives. And we haven't always been able to work together, but doing this, we were able to work together. And, you know, we wanted to create a company that felt like a family. And I think that word gets probably overused and tossed around quite a bit. But I think we've achieved it. And that's kind of how all our employees and everybody else who's part of the company, you know, whether they're guides or, you know, vendors or artists or whatever, they said, man, this just feels like a family here. And so we, you know, I got Marguerite to take the dogs out for our podcast, but we usually have 4 or 5 dogs running around the building. We've got, you know, Jay's got his bus parked out front and he's got a hammock hanging in the trees. He sleeps in the office. Love it's it. An old race car garage, so we got showers here. And so
awesome.
When people come in, they just stay at the office, and we got mattresses everywhere. And so we just wanted to feel relaxed. We don't want to have this big barrier between work and the rest of your life. We want it to kind of, we want to know what everybody's doing. We care about what everybody's doing. Importantly, every single person is an owner of the company. And so we gave everybody stock in the company. Wow. And I don't think anybody had ever had that before, you know, and it's up and down from, you know, the hourly folks all the way up to the top. And it creates an environment where people do feel like they're a part, like they have a vested interest, like they're building something for the future. And they're not just working for the man or working for the stockholder. And when we make decisions, we make them together. If we're going to hire a new person and bring them in, we ask everybody what they think of that person, because most of them know who is going to, they've worked with them before at the other place. And so there's a screening process that makes them. And then like every Friday, it's a little thing, but we have a little lunchroom downstairs. And so we all get together and I buy everybody lunch and we have like a family meal. We all sit around one big table and we talk and, we do it every Friday, no matter what. And so, you know, I think family can extend beyond blood and, you know, beyond the traditional model. And it's really a term for, you know, where you, the people that you have, you know, kind of honest and, you know, sort of deep friendships with. And where you're going to take care of each other, you're going to have each other's back. You know, you're going to think about the whole more than just yourself. And there's so much like self-centered, you know, selfishness out in the world. I mean, not to get like too deep about it, but, you know, we got to care about each other and we got to come together to care about each other. I think more than any time that certainly since I've been alive and probably in the history of the world, the stakes are high, you know, and these kids, they're having to deal with, wow, is the planet going to come to an end? And I mean, they're thinking about stuff. It gets talked about in the media all the time. And we never had to deal with that growing up. So it's scary. And there's all kinds of change going on. And now you got AI. I listen to other podcasts all the time. And everybody's talking about AI.
Yeah, you know? It's a big thing now.
They could do your whole show for you.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately, my eighth graders that I teach know more about AI than I do. So I'm going to have to do some research because they're filling me in on things. And I'm starting to get worried about that for sure.
Well, yeah, I was listening to one today and they had a teacher on and he was scared that all of the students were having a bot, you know, AI, the generative AI, write the papers. So he fed their papers back into the AI and asked them if he had he or she had written it. And the bot said, yes, I wrote all of these papers.
Oh, wow.
So he flunked all of the students. But the bot was wrong. He hadn't written all the papers. And so these kids got flunked by this teacher. And then the teacher got in a lot of trouble and so forth. But anyway, so you got to watch out as a teacher, you know.
yeah, for sure.
I just think it's so great, and it's so refreshing to hear the culture that you're able to create there with that company. I love that. I think it's very much, as you said, it's very much needed in our society today, of just finding places where people feel like they belong. That sense of belonging, that feeling of being connected to a bigger purpose, really matters for a lot of people. And I think the fact that you're able to do that through a sunglass company is really cool. And I think more people could benefit from that, and more companies could learn something from you guys when it comes to doing that as well. Al, you mentioned a little bit about your kids to us, kind of off air a little bit, but you said just a minute ago you've got five now, right? What's been your experience? Do they like to fish with you? Has that kind of been something that you guys have been able to do together?
Yeah, you know, we started out as more a golfing family. My dad played golf. That was his thing. And so my sons and my ex-father-in-law played golf as well and had a place in Pinehurst. And so the boys grew up playing golf and loved to play golf. But then I got them into fly fishing. I've taken them on a lot of really cool trips. And, you know, I'd say my middle son is the outdoors guy. Right. And then, my oldest he's more of a golfer, but loves to fly fish as well. He's such a great athlete. He could just pick up a fly rod and cast it better than
one
I can.
One of those. Yeah.
those people are fun to fish with.
And then the youngest one, you know, he lived out in Denver for a while. And so he loves to fly fish. And then our oldest daughter, we moved out to Bozeman. She came along, she went to Montana State. And so all she does is snowboard and fly fish and camp all the time. And so she's not coming back south. She's staying out there. And then Esme, who's sitting across the room and doing an internship with us for the summer, Not really an outdoor person, but, you know, we had her on the boat down in Ishkalak during the freaking hurricane, and she was a trooper, sat out there soaking wet doing it. So, I would say, you know, they've gotten more and more into it over the years, and it's definitely one of the things that we all do together.
So it sounds like you've gotten most of them into it kind of as they've gotten older. So what's kind of your tips for dads that are maybe who have older kids that are wanting to get their kids on the water with them and wanting them to experience and learn from the outdoors? Cause that's what we talk about all the time. You know, it's not so much that like we got to get them to like the things that we like. It's more of just having an intentional time with your kids. So what tips would you give for dads who want to maybe try to do that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you make. And it kind of goes across everything is like, try to, you know, let yourself not impose what your likes or dislikes or passions are onto the kids. And whether it's a career or it's, you know, something that they just do for fun, but really try to understand the kid and most kids are naturally just kind of interested in certain things, right? And I think starting there and with that interest and then building out from there is great. And, you know, I think the outdoors is kind of like, they call it Mother Earth for a reason. And it, when you take kids out there, nature does all the work. It kind of transforms them. And if they're open to it, and if you're open to how they want to interact out there, then magic can happen. You know, magic can totally happen. And it's not all about catching fish. I mean, it could be like playing with the freaking bugs in the grass, but celebrate those kind of things. And I don't know. I've met very few kids who, in one way or the other, don't respond to the outdoors when it's presented to them in the right way. know.
I think what we see all the time, and you just mentioned it, they may not love fly casting. They may not fall in love with even, you know, reeling in fish, although most kids tend to like that. Once you get a fish on the line, they tend to like that tug and play fish and net fish. But what we've kind of learned through doing this show and talking to more and more people is what you just said, that time out there, those conversations are going to be different with your own kids. Some of those conversations and some of those memories are going to just make a difference forever, and things that you're never going to forget. And I just thought maybe if you could maybe talk about just one, maybe a cool story or something you have with maybe one of your kids. Not to, I know it's hard. You have to pick, right? We always put people on the spot. It's not fun. But when you've been able to maybe just catch a cool fish or have a cool moment in a certain place, whether it's Montana or on the flats with some of your kids.
Yeah, well, you know, my middle son, I mean, I felt like I needed to meet them where they were. So, you know, I've had to be a golfer and a fly fisherman and a biker and all these different things, you know, that I was terrible at. But my middle son and I, our thing was to hike the Appalachian Trail every summer and sometimes in the spring and the fall. And we would just go for a week at a time and do different sections of it. And man, that was like the most incredible bonding experience. I mean, there's no TV, there's no media. You're working all day, so you're going up, and it's like a metaphor for life. You know, you're going up these hills, and then you go down, and it's super easy, and you know, up at the top, at beautiful views. But it's, you know, you got to work, and then you're rewarded for the work. And then it's just kind of like one step at a time, one foot in front of the other. And there's thousands and thousands of steps along the way. But it, I don't know, we would make a fire every night and we, you know, cook our food and we'd sleep in a little hut or in the tent and usually take a dog with us. And I mean, those times were just priceless. I mean, just so special. And I, you know, my son's name's Dylan, and he's a surfer in California now, but he's changed things up a little bit, but still goes up in the mountains and hikes and does all that kind of stuff. And he and I spent a week down in Belize permit fishing, 1 year, and that was super fun as well. So, if I had to pick one, I'd say the time with him on the trail was super special.
Too cool, man. I think one thing I've heard throughout this this episode from you, and first of all, it's really an honor for Caleb and I to have such a successful person join our show, and it's been all over the country, not only fishing, but as a successful person in business. But what I hear, and you could tell me, I think this is what I hear throughout, is for people who are maybe wanting to start something or who maybe wanting to do something, maybe it's fly fishing for the first time, maybe it's take your kids on an adventure, but caring about other people, I just have really heard that from you tonight, from your staff, from your family, from these times that you've been intentional to make these things happen. Even that Friday lunch, man, that's intentional, like to make that happen over and over again to make sure it happens. So if you can, just to kind of close out, just speak to why that's so important to you, just those intentional times of being and building that culture, not only in your family, but also in your business.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we spend, and I'll tell you, I'm not the perfect dad. I'm not the perfect boss. I've screwed up a ton over the years, and I think you just keep trying to figure it out and get it right your whole life. I don't think you ever actually do. And so I think being comfortable with knowing that, you know, that perfect family that you see on television, Leave It to Beaver, you know, whatever, is a myth. It doesn't exist, man. Life is bumpy and it's always a struggle. But you know, the one constant is people, and there's, I don't know, man, I just feel like there's so much just kind of like people putting on masks and playing, not being honest about who they are and about how they feel, is it just creates these inauthentic relationships. And if you can find ways to just say, look, we're all humans, right? We're all people. You know, when we travel to different parts of the world and we meet local people, which we always, you know, try to do, it's amazing, like, to hear what they care about. Mm. What do they care about? Oh, my, I got a little three-year-old girl. She's a pain in the ass. She's, you know, it's all their families and their kids. And that is common across every culture, every country, you know, every generation throughout time. It is parents caring about their kids and the kids learning from their parents and caring about their parents. That's what we all have in common. Mm. And so if we can, you know, somehow come together and tackle the problems that, and the challenges that are preventing us from having, you know, authentic relationships and, you know, a place to do all the cool things we love to do into the future, you know, do it for the kids if you don't do it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe that's a way to help bring old people together too.
I love it. I love it. Well, Al, this has been so great. And again, just so refreshing to hear the kind of culture you're building there at Bajio and talking about time with your family. We really appreciate your time with us. We want to tell everybody if they want to check out Bajio sunglasses, they can do that just online, bajiosunglasses.com. It's Bajio sunglasses.com. They're also on Instagram and all the socials. Same thing, Bajio sunglasses.
You can get one of those rooster shirts. I checked while we were on break there. Those things look pretty sweet. They have a hat, a cool hat with it too. They have some really cool apparel to go if you're into that sort of thing, which I thought there was a couple cool options on there. I was definitely looking. That rooster is pretty awesome. They also have a vibrant Instagram that you can follow, Bajio sunglasses. A lot of our buddies we've had on the show are wearing Bajio sunglasses now. Sure. That you can even find them in Maggie Valley Fly Shop right here in West North Carolina's carrying Bajio sunglasses. So Al, anything else for us or for the listeners? Caleb, anything else before we get out of here?
No, man, I love what you guys are doing. It's I've never heard of anything like what you guys are doing. And it's such a cool message, an important message. And I wish you all the luck with it. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Al. We really appreciate you. And thanks, everyone, for checking out this conversation with Mr. Al Perkinson of Bajio Sunglasses. And until next time, tight lines. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. We hope this episode has inspired you as a parent or an angler.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please check us out at dadsonthefly.com. There you can subscribe to our email list and find out all the things we got going on here at Dads on the Fly.